Welcome once again to the Irish in Sweden podcast, my friends. And if it's not sponsored by Lemsip, it's certainly brought to you by Lemsip. Because, Jesus, I've had more Lemsip in the last week. It's like this, lads, right? Went to Dublin. Great time altogether. You may have seen I had a good chat there with Mary Lou MacDonald, the leader of Sinn Féin. The woman some people are saying might be the next Taoiseach of Ireland. We had a grand time altogether. Came back late in the Friday night, banging out podcast to beat the band. And then last week, I was going to the Spuds and Sill rehearsal for their new play, Canaries, more of which anon on the Monday evening. Start to feel a bit sniffly. I say, sure, I'll go anyway. And I pretty much came home that evening and I was in bed ever since. Now, I did manage to sneak out on the Wednesday, the Thursday evening to do the interview that you're about to hear, but absolutely flat out. And it's no crack, lads, because that's about the third or fourth time this winter that that's happened. And being self-employed, not a good thing, lads. Not a good buzz at all. And as a result now, I'm so far behind in the work I'm supposed to be doing that I kind of had to knock the play on the head. So if you know anybody who wants to get involved in the upcoming production of Canaries by the Spuds and Sill Theatre Company, the English language theatre company here in Stockholm, they're looking for somebody to play the role of a man named Fergus in it, right? Great crack altogether. Not too much work in it, but I'm so far behind now, I won't be able to do it myself. Grace O'Malley is producing, directing, working wonders there. Lydia Lafferty as well. They're doing brilliant things altogether. Great crack. Fantastic cast. Do drop me a message if you want to get involved or look them up. They have a new Instagram account there as well, so it's worth looking them up there. Brilliant people altogether, and I wish them every success. But it's just a shame that I can't be part of it myself. Very busy week ahead, lads, right? So it's St. Patrick's week this week. It's gone from being one day, the 17th of March, and then you leave Ireland, and then it's kind of, you know, the closest day that you could possibly get absolutely hammered and still go to work the next day. So the parade is on the 16th, and there's a party down in Gothenburg on the 16th, and there's a parade in Malmo on the 16th, and God only knows what they're doing above in Yavla and in Västerås and in all these other places where the Irish community is gathered. But there's loads going on. If you go to SwedishIrish.com, you will find the details of all the events around St. Patrick's Day. The Swedish Irish Society have done a brilliant job of collecting all the information there about the sort of the official, in inverted commas, events there. The Irish Chamber of Commerce in Sweden is holding its annual St. Patrick's Day lunch, and that is on the 15th. So that's this coming Friday at lunchtime in the middle of Stockholm, Oddfellowhuset. Really good food last year, really good time last year. We were down there for several hours meeting people. Neil Costigan gave the keynote speech. This year, I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think Minister Anne Rabbit is going to be here. She's going to be the dignitary that's joining us from Ireland, and it's going to be great to see her, especially in the wake of what we've had recently. We've had a couple of referendums there, that both of which were voted no to, but I'm hoping to talk to her about you know, what message she and the government has for the Irish community at the moment, what they expect from us and what we can expect from them. So it's always fascinating to have a chance to chat with the ministers, and I always appreciate it hugely. You know, you'll get any amount of bitching and moaning about, oh, look at them all getting on their private jets and going around the world. Lads, we live in an island, right? They're not going to come and see us. So we have to go to the White House, and we have to go to London, and we have to go to Tokyo, and we have to go wherever we have the chance and use the opportunity and the goodwill of St. Patrick's Day. And I think that falls to us as well. So if you're in the pubs over St. Patrick's Day, remember that you too are an ambassador for Ireland. You're an ambassador for Cillian Murphy and for Gaelic Games and for Lancome and for Tato and for all these things. So let's put our shoulders to the wheel there, lads. Now, get the green jerseys on over the weekend. Jesus knows it never takes too much encouragement usually to get you to do that. And let's get out there and celebrate Ireland and promote Ireland to the people around us, because it's one of the few national days, maybe Bastille Day in France and the 4th of July in America. And after that, who remembers when St. George's Day is? I know English people who don't even know where that is, right? So let's get out there and make the most of it on behalf of ourselves and our communities. Now, this podcast will be a little bit shorter. Under normal circumstances, I would read you a list of dates and things and everything else that's going on, but I don't have the time and the energy for it. I'm so desperately trying to be fit for the weekend that I want to get another sort of, you know, pint of Lemsip into me and get back into me bed. But before I do that, I want to bring you what I was a really, really enjoyable interview to do. And luckily for me, Gray Hawthorne came up from Gothenburg. He was up last week. He's from Northern Ireland, and he's very, very well known amongst our musician friends, not just here in Sweden, but all over Scandinavia. And that is because of, not just because he's a hugely talented singer and guitar player, but it's because of his absolute undying devotion to country music, right? Now, there'll be lads out there who are into the hip hop, and there'll be lads out there who are into the heavy metal, and they'll be reaching for the dial and going, oh, jeez, I don't, lads, you need to listen to this fella, right? Because it's not just, you know, big hat, no cattle, as we mentioned in the interview. It's really a sort of a part of Irish music. Country music is obviously extremely popular in Ireland, and some people think it's naff, and that's okay. It's not for everybody. But it's music that's full of great storytelling. And indeed, Gray's own story recently has been a little bit tough. He has had a change in his family where himself and his wife decided to separate and that kind of thing. And it was that's part of the reason that the conversation came about, because I was saying to him that that's something that unfortunately many of us who've come over here and we've met Swedish partners, and some of us are still with them and more of us aren't, and it's one of those things that happens. And it's one of those things that I wanted to talk about on this show for you. Now, we don't get hugely into the details. It's not like I'm jumping into the bed in the middle of them and asking them what went wrong. That's not the thing at all. But it is that idea of if you're together with somebody and things go wrong for you, you know, you're in a romantic relationship or a committed relationship, and like, what do you do and who do you turn to and that kind of thing. So I just thought that was one of those things that was worth having a chat about. So we did. We went out to Darren Cash's pub, Jakob's bar out in Jakob's Bay, which conveniently enough is very close to the martial arts gym where I trained. I was sick last week, so I couldn't go training anyway. So, but we sat down and we had a fantastic chat about country music and the lure of country music and yeah, life in general and how one gets through all these things that country music songs tend to be about, and losing your dog and losing your woman and your car breaking down and all that, because let's face it, it's all ahead of us. I will be back to wrap this up, but for now, let's have a little chat with Gray Hawthorne about country music and life in Sweden. This machine actually going to behave itself. My God, it is, for once. Gray Hawthorne, the king of country from the west coast of Sweden. How are you keeping?
Not too bad, man, yourself.
I'll tell you, I'm not too bad at all, but I'm not as good as your hat, I'll tell you that much, you know.
It's a big hat.
It's a big hat. What's that? Big hat, no cattle.
Exactly, you know? No cattle at all.
Yeah, but you have a guitar, that's what you have.
I do.
Tell me, where did this love of country music that is so much part of your character come from?
It's very simple. That was... when I was a kid, when I was growing up, that's all that played at home.
Was it?
My dad. It was only country music. And I thought it was great at the time, blah, blah, blah. And then 13, starting to play guitar. Didn't think it was so cool. Thought I only wanted to play Metallica and Pantera and Sepultura and stuff like that. So I kind of drifted away from it. But that's where it came from. Without a doubt, my dad. Mm. I mean, my dad toured, was a touring musician for years, and... that was all that was played.
That was the music that
he played.
Yeah,
it was Waylon Jennings, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson. Not so much Johnny Cash. Dad was never a fan of Johnny Cash.
Was he not, no?
No.
Was that because Johnny put the finger up on that album cover?
It might have been, but I've never actually spoken to him about why he doesn't really like Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Never liked Johnny Cash. But Bellamy Brothers, stuff like that, you know, stuff that I don't really listen to nowadays. But no, it was that. And then Garth Brooks came along and... as a kid, it blew my mind. Like, you know, he's running around on stage, smashing guitars and
going nuts,
hanging out over the audience on ropes, and there's flames. And
do you know? I remember working for. There used to be record shops where you actually had to go and buy your music. Like, you know,
I remember those days?
Yeah, where you didn't get everything through the phone. Yeah. And there was a guy called Richard who used to work for EMI in Ireland, and he came in one day. And he had like a catalogue of stuff, and it was Garth Brooks, up to and including the album where he had a variety of great shorts, but this one he had a blue and black short on the front of it, you know?
Yeah, it was one of the, what was that one called? Oh, I can't remember.
But he says to us, this lad is going to be huge. Mm. And we were saying, okay, why this guy rather than everybody else? And he said, that was the time when music video also was a big thing, you know, in the early 90s, he was, you know. What was it about him in particular? Because he was a bit more towards the Metallica end of things in terms of the energy, anyway.
I think that's what it was, because I got a... there was, I think it was on, they showed it on television, a live concert, and I recorded it in VHS and
wore the tape out then after.
Wore the tape. It was the stage show. And then at that time I thought it was good music.
Yeah.
It was good music. And also in later years, when I refound my love for country music after many years of not really listening to it that much, I was a little bit anti the likes of Garth Brooks and Shania Twain and all those artists because they were, I convinced myself that they made a mockery of country music because they became a little bit pop.
Yeah, yeah.
and
kind of sold out in inverted commas.
Exactly that. But also, I've realized, now I'm over 40, I've realized that maybe it was a good thing that they did, because they introduced a lot of people that never had listened to country music before, that started listening to country music because of the likes of Garth Brooks and Sinatra. And then those people started listening George Jones, and they started listening Waylon Jennings and Merle Haggard and stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't all bad with the likes of Garth Brooks, and even, pains me a little bit to say it, but the likes of Tim McGraw and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. A little bit cringy, but at the same time.
A little
time,
bit cringy, but it introduced a lot of people to country music as well.
Of course, you mentioned there Johnny Cash. He made those albums with Rick Rubin, which sort of reintroduced him to a completely new audience.
Absolutely.
And he also ended up picking songs like Nine Inch Nails, Hurt, and that kind of thing that you may not have heard otherwise, you know.
Rusty Cage by Soundgarden.
That, you know, where did they even come up with these ideas? Like, you know,
That must have been Rubin as well, but it could have been Cash as well.
Yeah.
He was, when Cash came out, he was like punk.
Yeah.
Because but he wasn't country in the beginning. He was more almost rockabilly.
Rock and roll, rockabilly kind of thing,
But then he became, people started calling his music country.
Yeah.
But he was punk.
High energy.
He was never really part of the outlaw movement, which came a little bit later, but it was like, you know, a middle finger to the norm.
And country music itself in many ways, like, you know.
Yeah.
If you had to toss a coin, right, because you had the likes of Hank Williams, you had these very straight-laced country stars, you had people who were very conservative, and then on the other flip side of that, you had Johnny Cash and you had Steve Earle and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which direction would you lean, or are you a sort of an omnivore where you just love all the different varieties of it?
I mean, I love George Jones, I love Merle Haggard, but I also, I would probably lean more towards the outlaw country movement, like Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, David Allan Coe.
Yeah.
That sort of country. I would lean a little bit more towards that.
Yeah.
To be honest.
What is it about that appeals to you?
I know it's a little bit of a middle finger to Nashville.
Yeah.
Even though the majority of them, they're like Waylon and Willie, they're both from Texas, but they lived in Nashville, like, you know, they
They based themselves there, they worked there, they wrote their songs
but,
there.
But they still were against the norm, like, you know.
When you started playing your own music, you mentioned the sort of, you know, the hard rock, the heavy metal influence, and it was, you know, mostly fairly extreme stuff that you were listening to.
Obituary. Sepultura, stuff like that.
Brazilian,
like,
you know, metal bands. But to go from that to country, they're not natural bedfellows, Gray.
No, I know. I was a teenager and maybe starting to rebel a little bit as well, like, you know, and I didn't want
loads of testosterone and, like, make this noisy.
The funny thing is, when I turned 15, I got my first ever paid gig. It was a Saturday night, and my dad had just stopped playing in, like, bigger bands, and he got he was playing in a little duo doing the pub circuit, and he'd gone to his gig, and the phone rang, and it was the singer from the band he'd just quit, actually. Trevor Dixon and the Country Dixies. So Trevor phoned on the Saturday night. Oh, is your dad home? No, Trevor, he's gone to his gig now. I said, oh, shit. I said, I need a guitar player. I said, well, I've got a guitar and an amplifier. He said, oh, do you have a pair of black slacks? Yeah, I do. He said, I'll pick you up in half an hour. So he came and collected me, jumped into his, he had a big Mercedes tour bus thing, and jumped into that, went to the gig, and at the end of the gig, he gave me £50. This is 90, summer 96, it must have been, because I was 15. My birthday's in September, so it must have been 96.
It'd be nearly half a week's wages for a young fella at that stage.
Amazing, you know, 15 to get 50 quid, you know, over the moon. And then, like, everyone knew on the circuit knew my dad, because he'd played on that circuit for years.
But hold on one second, no rehearsal. No, nothing. Now, no, you'd nothing. Seen the show before. You kind of knew what songs were
in
there.
Yeah, I knew the songs.
How on earth did you get through that?
I am blessed to have a really good ear. So I can, like, listen and say, oh, that's a G chord, that's a D chord. Even if I didn't know the songs, that's a D chord. And then at that time, I was starting to get into playing a bit of lead guitar. So I threw on a few licks here and there, and it went great. And you know, I'd heard all these songs, as you say, like, I'd seen my dad play many times.
Yeah.
I knew the songs. I played, sat home and jammed with my dad playing these songs, you know.
Yeah.
So I knew the songs. It was easy.
How many people would have been in the audience that night, would you say? Because people took their music, their live music, seriously back then.
Yeah,
right?
They did. Yeah, this was at a golf club outside Ballymena, I think. I think it was about 200 to 300.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And all of a sudden you're up on the stage there, don't you think?
Yeah. It was cool, man. It was amazing. I loved it.
Really hope you're enjoying this conversation with Gray Hawthorne. Just a reminder that this is a listener-supported podcast, a community-supported podcast. It only exists because you do. Patreon.com/Arrowman in Stockholm if you want to support it for a fiver a month. And if you'd like to get in touch about sponsorship, I'd really like to talk to you over St. Patrick's Day, right? This is not going to survive very much longer, folks, if we don't start to generate a little bit of money doing these things. So patreon.com/Arrowman in Stockholm if you want to contribute a fiver a month. And indeed, you can get in touch about sponsorship. Just grab me over St. Patrick's Day. And if you can, please share the podcast. You'll note that the sister podcast, The Global Gale, is going to have a live show in London on April 16th featuring Joe O'Neill, who actually used to live with us here in Stockholm. So I'd really appreciate if you could share any stories, any Instagram posts, any tweets, any Facebook posts, just to help us to do that, because every little bit helps. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do a little bit to make sure that Irish in Sweden and The Global Gale podcast stay on the airwaves. Back to Gray about his first gig above in a golf club in Ballymena. 200-300 people, first gig done, 50 quid into your pocket, burning a hole in it. Did you live in Ballymena at that point?
No, I'm from a small village outside of Banbridge called Kinallen.
Okay.
And I think when I was a kid, it was like 300 people lived there.
Yeah.
My grandfather had the biggest farm in the village. And
yeah.
So I grew up a lot helping out in the farm as well.
Yeah.
So that was fun. Like,
there was a lot of country music in that as well.
There is. Definitely.
What was it like then? Because back then, I suppose the 90s probably wasn't the same, right? But during the 70s, people used to talk about Rory Gallagher going up north and playing. Was the music scene sort of mixed then? Because country music, or you know what we call country and Irish in Ireland, where you know you have that Irish thing, was that a big thing in the north as much as it would have been, you know, in Monaghan and Cavan?
It's a massive thing in the north.
Is it? Yeah,
it really is. Huge.
And did you come across that then doing your gigs, or was that the sort of circuit you would have been playing on?
Yeah, I mean, it was. You noticed that this is a big thing. Like, you know, it's very popular. It's like dance band here, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like show bands.
Yeah,
basically. And it was it's a definitely a big thing in the north.
Yeah.
Well.
And was there plenty of work then for you from the time you did your first gig, or was that a once off?
The thing is, word got around that Tommy Hawthorne's son was was 15 and a handy guitar player, like, you know. So other people started calling.
Yeah.
And like, you know,
and you started answering.
my dad would answer the phone, and he's like, I'm actually calling looking for the young fella, you know. And my dad was over the moon.
He was
delighted, man. He was over the moon because he was done with that. He didn't want to do the big stage thing anymore. You know, he'd done it for 30 years, like, you know, so he was done with it. Like.
Yeah.
So the next gig I got was another band that dad had played in. Joey Hamilton and the High Chaparral, God rest his soul, Joey's gone now. So he called me and said, look, I'm playing a gig in a couple of weeks, I need a guitar player. I said, yeah, sure. So at the end of the gig, he says to me, how much did Dixon pay you? I goes, he gave me 50 quid. He goes, here's 60. You know,
so... So you were the subject of a bidding war.
Yeah, exactly. But then, you know, I played at... I think it's called Barry's Hotel in Dublin.
Yes, yeah.
I played there with a guy called Thomas Milligan, who I'd never heard of before. He's from the west of the north,
out from
Cookstown, Oma direction. You know, he's from that direction, and he came and collected me. Or no, the drummer who my dad had played with many years before came and collected me, and then we met them somewhere, and then drove down to. I think we started playing at midnight. And played straight through to 2 a.m.
That sounds about right for Barry's, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And there were 600 people in the audience then.
Yeah.
And then we loaded the gear out and drove straight home. So I think I got home at like 8 or 9 the next morning.
Yeah.
And I think I was 19 by that time.
You were a little bit more...
A bit older.
You'd grown into it a little bit.
Exactly.
Like, you know? Was that the kind of life that you wanted? Because obviously you grew up in a house where your dad played for, you know, you knew nothing else kind of thing. Did you want to follow in his footsteps?
I never wanted to... be a full-time musician.
Yeah.
But I I did love being on stage. It was you've done it yourself. It's a rush, like, you know. Yeah. It is.
Oh, there's nothing like it when it's going well.
It does feed the ego a little bit, like, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when you get a good response. Like, yeah. I'm doing troubadour gigs now, and
yeah.
And if you're getting a great response from the audience, a good audience, and you're getting a good response, it does definitely boost your ego a little bit, like, you know.
How does that kind of music go down here? Because people here will ask you to play Country Roads and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it always annoyed me, Gray, because, like, when I go and play in Irish bars, I thought that these people would want to hear Irish music, that ballad tradition, you know, that we would have come from, and they didn't. They just wanted to hear, you know, Creedence, and they wanted to hear this kind of thing. And
I'd never listened to Creedence until I moved here.
No, me neither. You know, like, they were just imitating. You knew they existed.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
Does that bother you when people come up and are in your face with it? Because it bothers Ian Maloney. Most things bother Maloney. Yeah. In
no, Maloney's...
the greatest guy in the world.
He's a legend. But, yeah, I love when people come up and ask for requests. But nowadays they're asking for the likes of, like, if they want to hear, they're asking for Luke Combs, for example, as a country star, and I've never listened to Luke Combs because he's one of these newer artists, and I've tried to listen to him, but it just doesn't appeal. He's a great singer and everything, but it just his songs just don't really appeal to me. It's a little bit too Nashville and a little bit too clean, and there are a lot of new artists I'm listening to nowadays that are true to traditional country, like Tyler Childers. Saw him live at Munchen Burgeriet last night.
Yeah.
And I'm not a believer, but I think that he was sent down from heaven to grace this planet with his voice.
That good, huh?
It was mind-blowing. I actually cried during one song.
Did you?
Yeah. I literally cried during one song.
It's amazing because they often say that, you know, the music you listen to between 14 and 16 is what you stick to for the rest of your life. But my father always said to me, he said, you'll always end up coming back to the Beatles because they were first, you know. And we kind of, all sorts of music kind of does.
But I love the Beatles as well.
But what they were doing was robbing from rock and roll and country, you know, until they took loads of drugs and then it all just went west.
And their music became good.
Yeah. Do you see any parallel there? I've always seen a very strong parallel between country music and what it became in Nashville and that ballad tradition I mentioned earlier on. Do you see... Because musically, the chord structures are quite similar, and the storytelling is similar, and it just seems like, you know, America just bleached it in the sunshine.
I mean, it all
kind of
came from the Appalachians, like, you know.
Yeah.
That was like Irish people playing traditional music. That's where country came from.
Yeah.
So
you can
trace
it
three
back.
Three chords.
Like, yeah.
People say it was Willie Nelson said it. I can't remember exactly who it was said it, but three chords and the truth. That's country music.
I think Bono used to rob that line as well, you know, like, the less said the better kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
But when you look at it now, right, you mentioned there, you're playing your gigs, you're going around. Why do you still do this?
Play gigs?
Yeah.
Because I love it. It's therapy for me.
Is it, yeah?
It is. And I don't stray too far from home. I like the, I play Boone's Bistro where Ian plays every weekend.
Yeah.
If he can't do it, I'm usually the first one he'll ask.
Yeah.
He still hasn't got into the swing of me only being able to do it on even weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the kid situation. But
yeah.
But I love playing. It's a great gig. It's a fun gig. It's a good audience and a very mixed audience age wise. And then. They call me the Gothenburg Cowboy there, which is kind of a cool thing, like, you know.
Who doesn't want to be called?
Well, I mean, I always wear the hat and the boots when I'm playing, like, you know, and I get away with playing a lot of country music as well.
How much does the hat help?
It's good. It gets a little bit of attention from the ladies.
I can imagine. Well. Like, if it means you don't have to play Wonderwall, I think it's definitely worth it.
I still play Wonderwall, but, you know, only when people ask for it.
You mentioned there that the family situation has changed. How did you come over here? Did you meet a Swede and then come over here?
I did. I met my first Swedish partner on an internet chat room, actually.
Yeah.
And
it's the most 90s thing that's ever been said on this podcast.
Yeah, this was actually... 2001, I believe, and then we travelled back and forth for a year, and then she moved over to me actually, and we rented a place in Banbridge and lived there for 3.5 years, and then we moved over here.
Yeah.
To Gothenburg.
And then
that ended 2010, and then I met another girl who we actually just sent in our divorce papers, final divorce papers yesterday.
Yeah. How painful was that for you?
Incredibly. It came as a shock. It came like a slap in the face. I wasn't expecting. 3 weeks after we celebrated being married for 10 years.
And that was it then? That was just... It was,
yeah. And I know, I understand why it happened. I'm not going to get into that, but
yeah.
I understand why it happened and why it had to happen.
Mm.
But no, it was a big shock.
Mm.
Especially when there's three kids involved.
Yeah.
We have three kids, three amazing.
She's the mom of all three of your children.
She is, yeah.
So, well, in one way, you know, it's lucky that it wasn't sort of one here, one there kind of thing where it gets increasingly complicated.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, I'm three kids with her, but she moved out on the 1st of December. So we lived together for like almost four months.
Mm.
Separated.
But still living in the same place.
So she slept in our son's bed along with him every night.
Yeah.
And I slept in our bed. Like, you know,
and was that because of difficulties in finding somewhere to stay in Sweden? And
it's not easy. I mean, she was looking the whole time. But then she got a place. She moved out. And actually was playing Boone's Bistro the weekend she moved out, which was probably good. It was a good thing, like, you know. But it was... it's tough now. And then the week after... She moved out on a Friday, and then on the Monday it was my kid week. So I think that was also very good to like have the kids and not be alone for the first week.
Yeah.
But
because it really is, it's a sort of a schizophrenic life after a while. Because, you know, the weeks you're up in Stockholm now talking to me, and I'm delighted to see you. Mm. Next week you'll have the chaos of having three kids.
Yeah,
running
around. And it is chaos.
Yeah, and there's nothing else. Like, you know, there'll be no gigs and Beans Beast or
anything
else
There'll be nothing else. It'll be. You know, I finish work a little bit earlier in the days. I have the kids, rush home, collect them from school and preschool.
Mm.
My oldest daughter's 9, and then I have another daughter. She's starting first school of class now in August. She'll be 6 in September. And my boy, he'll be 4 in April.
Yeah.
So it's
full on the whole time.
Full on the whole time.
Yeah. And the flip side of that, then it must be very empty the weeks that they're not there.
It is. But I've been pretty good at filling my time. I've been picking up the guitar and trying to write some music, and I meet friends and have friends over and do stuff.
Mm.
The occasional date as well, you know.
There you go. You're not sort of content to go, okay, you know, once bitten, that kind of thing.
No, back on the horse, man.
Straight away?
Not straight away, but it
not far
took
off.
A little while, but, you know, I have to do something to get over this thing, like, you know.
Yeah. One of the things that over the years, I mean, unfortunately, you're not the first Irishman that this has happened to. You probably won't be the last either, you know. Is there people that you can reach out to? Do you feel that you have... Because, you know, you're far from home, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how long we live here. We're still from somewhere else. Our families are back in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, they're back on the farm in Northern Ireland for you. How do you find that? You know, do you find yourself very alone, or do you feel that you kind of have a support network?
I have massive support. I have my sister. She lives in the south of France.
Mm.
I speak to her regularly. I have, or not regularly enough, actually I should speak to her more. Cormac, Ian.
Yeah.
The boys, you know.
Actually going to get Cormac on to talk about football now, because he's mad for Bake O'Heck.
Yeah, he sure is.
Soon enough, you know. And you find those guys, like, it's easy
massive
to talk
support.
To.
And then I have a few female friends as well, that they started Team Grey straight afterwards.
That's
straight
brilliant.
After
that's
this happened,
brilliant.
And they were like taking care of me, something shocking, man.
Yeah,
sending me messages all the time and meeting with me, coming to the pub with me, and making sure I wasn't getting too drunk.
Yeah, making sure you got home
and crying and stuff, like, you know.
Because there's that sort of, you know, it's almost the most country music thing ever to happen.
It really is.
That, you know, do you find solace in the music then, in writing music and listening to music and playing music?
I hadn't written a song. I think the last time I wrote a song and actually completed it was 2009.
Well,
but then you know, the Mellandagarna between Christmas and New Year, I picked up a guitar a couple of nights, and I wrote two songs in a week.
Well,
and I don't know if they're good songs or whatever, but Ian's listened to them, Cormac's listened to them, and they say they're good songs, like, you know.
Yeah. And are they the kind of things when you play in Beans Bistro, that kind of thing? Do you play your own songs as well if you feel like
it? Nah, not so much. I have thrown in one of my. I never really classified myself as a songwriter.
Yeah.
Not to the extent of like the likes of Ian or Darren sitting out there.
Yeah.
But I can throw in every now and again.
Yeah.
Very rarely.
What does it give you when you've completed a song? You know, do you feel a sense of pride, a sense of achievement when that happens?
Achievement, definitely. It's like, because it's to write music, even if it's, if other people don't think it's good, if you think yourself it's a good song, if you think, this is, it's a great feeling.
Yeah.
You've written songs yourself, you know that feeling. It is a sense of pride and achievement and fulfillment, especially, but these songs I've written now are very, like, brutally honest about the situation that I'm going through and that I've been through.
I think it was Rick Rubin who produced those great Johnny Cash albums who said, you should never write for anybody else. You can only really write for yourself.
I've been writing for myself as a form of self-therapy almost. I'm actually going to get in touch with Rick and see if he'll produce them for me.
You never know. We could have the County Down Johnny Cash coming up.
You never know. The star of the County Down.
Is there a plan for those songs now? Or because you mentioned before that you never really wanted to be a full-time musician. You just enjoyed
it. I did it actually between 2010 and 2014.
Did you?
Playing with Ian in the band.
And
then doing the solo gigs as well. Yeah. Ian and I did a lot of duo gigs as well. We played up here. We played Uppsala. We played Malmö, Copenhagen.
How was that?
It was great. I'd never wanted to do it, but John Higgins got in touch with me.
The legendary John Higgins from County Cork.
Exactly. Who I've been speaking to a lot on the phone recently, actually. got in touch with me and said, like, he'd been in touch with me previously and said, like, I can get you work full time if you want. I said, nah. I had a full time job at that time. Nah, I'm happy enough.
Yeah.
But then I just got to the point where the job I was in, it was boring, and I thought, nah, why not? So I got in touch with him. Can you sort me out? He said, yeah, of course. So I started, and
because there's not a life for everybody, Greg. That can be a tough life.
It's I think the longest I was ever away from home was 11 days, so it wasn't that much, but still, it's 11 days, when you're away from your partner. And this was before kids
had come into the picture,
exactly. I actually quit the band and quit the full time gigs when we found out we were expecting our first, because I didn't want to. I remember how it was when I was a kid and my dad was away all the time.
Yeah.
He'd be away for a week and then home for a few days and then away for 3 or 4 days.
He'd probably be tired enough when he came home as well, wouldn't he?
He's tired when he came home, but it was just, that I'm missing him so much. I didn't want that to be the case for my kids.
Yeah.
So that's why I gave it up. I actually didn't play at all for 6 months.
Did you not? No, nothing at all.
No gigs at all.
Yeah.
Barely touched the guitar for 6 months.
How would you find it physically? Because singing for 3 45-minute sets or 4 45-minute sets and making yourself heard over a pub in Copenhagen, that kind of thing, ain't easy. Did you find it relatively easy to do when there's two of you?
In the beginning, it was tough because, like, after singing 2 nights, my voice would be shot, and then I'd have like a third night to do.
If you're running on empty.
But I learned to sing from my stomach instead of singing from my throat.
Yeah.
I had to think about that in the beginning, but now it comes naturally. Like, you don't even think about it.
You lift the roof off the place with no effort.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but I'll give it a go anyway.
They'll hear you one way or the other.
Definitely.
Yeah. What's the plan now? Because, like, you mentioned the age of your children. The young lad is 4 at the moment, and what was it, 6 and 9?
Yeah,
was it,
he's almost 4. The daughter, she'll be 6 in September, so she's 5, and she's starting the Nollan in August, and then the oldest one, she's 9.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the life that you have now in Gothenburg and that kind of thing, are you content with that? I mean, obviously, you'd probably prefer not to be getting divorced and that kind of thing, but can you live with the hand that you've been dealt, so to speak?
Yeah. I mean, the plus side is that, I have this free week now and I can take gigs. And it's not that I couldn't take gigs before, but, like, obviously when you have to think of the family, they have to do a bit of planning and stuff, and I have to make sure with my ex-missus, I had to make sure with her when she was my missus, is it okay, like, if I take a gig this date?
Yeah.
And now I know I can only play on even weekends.
Yeah.
So I can plan and I don't have to have a guilty conscience about asking, can I go out for a pint? Like,
go out for a pint. You just go,
Yeah, exactly.
And come back on a Tuesday.
Exactly. I can go out on a Friday night and come home on Sunday night, or Monday morning.
And of course, you're free to come up to Stockholm and watch country music.
Exactly. I'm actually coming back again in May for a concert. Same weekend as Taylor Swift is playing.
Oh, God.
But a band called 49 Winchester.
You're more intent on seeing them than Taylor Swift.
Yeah, definitely.
Who, of course, has a root in country music?
She does. Yeah. That's debatable if it's country music she was playing, but it's...
Look, that's a whole other podcast. Right,
exactly.
There.
That's another podcast. She, no, but at least she had she admitted that, no, I'm not going to play country music anymore.
Yeah, she moved on from that kind of thing. We're going to get you to finish up with a song now. You're going to be grabbing Todd's guitar in a little while. But before we do that, tell us where we are, because this is not just your average bar in Yawkers
Barry. No, this is Jacob's Bar in Jacob's Barry in Stockholm, which is a short ride from Central Station on the Pendeltåg. And it's owned by none other than Darren Cash.
No relation to Johnny, but almost as entertaining.
He just walked in behind us there.
No, that has me worried.
The famous Darren Cash. And they also have their club Fredas Mangel, which is one of Sweden's most well-known heavy metal clubs.
That's once a month kind of thing on a Friday.
Oh, they do it every Friday, actually.
Is it every Friday now?
They have bands
every
weekend. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's
in the heart of Jacobs Bay, out in
exactly.
In the suburbs.
And they're rammed with people every weekend.
Yeah. Of course, our own Brian O'Connor has played out here as well. And have you played in this place? Yeah.
Never. No, I'm playing tomorrow night. Actually.
You're playing tomorrow.
In the bar.
That's in the bar outside there. Yeah, because there's a stage here in the venue at the back. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I'll play in the bar with, and Darren's going to jump up and do a few tunes with me as well.
My God, it'll be some entertainment altogether. I might have to come back and do that. And of course, we'll have to come back and do a podcast with Darren at some point.
He should.
Right.
I think we're going to get relatively well sourced tomorrow night.
But is that going to be a good thing for the gig or the bad thing?
It's going to be a good thing for the gig.
Fantastic.
We'll say it's going to be a good thing.
Before we get to play this song, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I'm hemming and hawing about which one to play. Because I have one that's traditional country.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's traditional country. And then I have a couple more singer-songwriter-y types.
Which one, in your heart of hearts now, which one would you...
I'm going to go for one of the singer-songwriter-y types.
Good man yourself.
But it's just brutally honest about my feelings.
Yeah. When was this one written? Was this one Mel and Dogana?
According to my iPhone, because I need to look at the lyrics, because I can't remember. 16th of December.
16th of December. So I've got the lyrics in the middle of the darkness and everything else. Like that.
Yeah.
Take from that what you will.
I will. I'm just going to grab the guitar then.
Right, we'll pause it. So while Gray is getting that sorted out, this is it for the podcast. He's going to play us out with one of his new songs. What's the song called?
It's called Into the Night.
Into the Night is the name of the song. You've been listening to the Irish in Sweden podcast for this week. We'll get a listen to this, and I will be back again next week. Until then, my friends, take care of yourselves, take care of one another. This is Gray Hawthorne, the Gothenburg Cowboy, with Into the Night.
It's a melody and tune, isn't it? Close enough for jazz.
Close enough for jazz.
Yes, exactly. Well, here we go. The world premiere. Not really in tune. Can we take that back? Please? Close enough for jazz now. Loading up for a fight in the dark of the night, with that alcohol fueling my bloodstream. Well, the woman I love, no, she don't love me. It's evident that she hates me. I've done many things that I shouldn't have done, mistreated who I love the most. Now I'm paying for that, and there's no coming back to the way it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago. Your forgiveness so I can move on, but I don't see that coming at all. Now I'm living my life just a day at a time, and watching my phone for your call. That Saturday night when I picked up that knife and proceeded to cut up myself. Well, I still don't know if I wanted to die or if it was a cry for help, cry for help. think I can beg anymore, so we'll just have to face the fact. You're cut out of my life by the blade of that knife. The pleasantries are just an act. Every other week when I'm all on my own and just longing to be by your side. I'm alone with my thoughts and my scars, staring out into the night.